Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I'd like you to join renowned theologian and author Jesuit Father Gerald O'Collins as he helps us better prepare for the forthcoming celebrations marking the opening session of the Second Vatican Council in October of 1962. He does this by bringing us two reflections, the first of which you're about to hear, in which he shares with us some very personal memories, including today, the impact of that breakthrough in February 1965, when he was allowed to celebrate together with other priests for the first time at the main altar, beginning to visibly express union in the one priesthood of Jesus Christ. But why don't you stay tuned as he begins by placing the Second Vatican Council into its historical context.
After he'd been Pope for only 90 days, John the 23rd announced that he was calling the Second Vatican Council. John the 23rd, now Blessed John the 23rd, wanted the Council to update the Catholic Church, renew it spiritually, re-establish unity among all Christians, and transform the relationship of Catholics with Jews, Muslims, and followers of other religions. From its opening session in October 1962, until its close on the 8th of December 1965, the Second Vatican Council held millions of Catholics and others riveted. The world's media followed closely the events that unfolded and the decisions that were taken during the four sessions of the Council. It was widely agreed that this was the greatest religious event of the 20th century. Around 2,500 bishops attended Vatican II. Anglican, Orthodox, and Protestant delegates were present as observers, and at times their advice played a significant role. Lay Catholics, both men and women, came as official auditors and on occasion addressed the bishops at the council. Like many Catholics of my generation, I experienced Vatican II as an enormous breath of fresh air and even a new Pentecost. To steal a line from the romantic poet William Wordsworth, 'twas joy then to be alive, but to be young was very heaven. The Catholic Church would never be the same again, nor would my own life. I was ordained to the priesthood by a bishop who had just returned from the first session of the Council. After completing my seminary training in Australia, I came to Europe and followed the third and fourth sessions from Germany and England. One special gift Vatican II brought me during my first year in Germany arrived on the 2nd of February 1965. I was living in Munster, Westphalia, with a community of 30 other young priests. Each of us used to be led out of the sacristy by a small altar boy to say Mass by ourselves in tiny side chapels. But then, from February 1965, we could all concelebrate together at the main altar. So we began to express visibly our union in the one priesthood of Jesus Christ. A few days later, I headed south from Münster to spend 2 months in a parish in Trier. Provisional texts in German were already available for baptisms, funerals, and marriages. It made so much more sense when people could follow the prayers in their own language. They could also now select the scriptural readings and help to shape the celebration through these and other choices. These changes, and especially the introduction of the vernacular, meant that people could truly participate in the services and not merely assist at them. For more than 1,000 years, priests in the Western Church had used only one Eucharistic prayer, the so-called Roman Canon. They had to whisper it in Latin, and were heard only by altar boys kneeling a few feet away. The faithful could follow in their missals what was being whispered at the altar, but many preferred to say the rosary, recite their own prayers, or simply wait for the moment when Holy Communion was distributed. Vatican II introduced 3 more Eucharistic prayers, with others to follow. They were to be said aloud in the vernacular, or even sung. The Council thus allowed us Westerners to catch up with our fellow Catholics and other Christians in the Eastern churches. From the early centuries of Christianity, the Eastern churches had enjoyed a variety of Eucharistic prayers which were normally sung and which a long time ago had been translated into the languages of the people. A further welcome change from Vatican II was the new lectionary, which provided readings for the Mass from all our Gospels and from a full range of other biblical books. It was a relief to hear passages from St. Mark and not face so much from the Gospel of Matthew. Before the liturgical reforms, Matthew's parable of the wise and foolish virgins turned up with such relentless regularity that I was almost put off that passage for life. One particularly helpful addition in the Reformed liturgy was the provision for the Passion story from Matthew, Mark, or Luke to be read on Palm Sunday. In the days before Vatican II, we had to wait until Good Friday before we heard John's magnificent account of the Lord's suffering and death. The introduction on Palm Sunday of a version of the Passion from one of the other Gospels helped to set the religious tone for Holy Week. What Vatican II encouraged in relations with other Christians filled me with hope and joy. Before the Council, Catholics were normally forbidden to pray with other Christians, even to say the Our Father with them. That changed for me dramatically in November 1964. Michael Ramsay, the Archbishop of Canterbury and head of the Anglican Communion, came to northern Germany and visited schools for the children of British Army personnel. At least a quarter of the children were Catholics. I stood with Dr. Ramsay on the stage during the prayer service with 700 or 800 boys and girls stretching away in front of us down a vast school hall. To my delight, the Archbishop asked us all to recite with him a prayer from St. Richard of Chichester, a prayer that came from the days when the Reformation had not yet divided Western Christians. The prayer went, "Thanks be to thee, my Lord Jesus Christ, for all the benefits which thou hast given me, for all the pains and insults thou hast borne for me, O most merciful Redeemer, friend and brother. May I know thee more clearly, love thee more dearly, and follow thee more nearly." On that visit, Archbishop Ramsay might have chosen to talk about the work and teaching of Vatican II and what the Council would bring in promoting closer relations between divided Christians. Instead, he spoke about Jesus and ended with that lovely prayer to the Lord. The Archbishop sensed, I believe, that the richest legacy of Vatican II would be Jesus himself.
And you were listening there to well-known author and theologian, Jesuit Father Gerald O. Collins. He'll be back again at the same time next week, sharing with us more memories of the Second Vatican Council. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.